Hi, Chris Bentley here. Thanks for downloading this episode of Here and Now Anytime. We have some great stories in the works, deep dives on the arts, the environment, childcare, and much more. To get those, plus the top news of the day, make sure you subscribe or follow us in the app of your choice. Just search for Here and Now Anytime. And if you're already subscribed, I'd love it if you told a friend about us. And thanks. Now here's the show.
I don't believe people can heal without grieving first. And I don't think that a lot of the families have allowed a time for grieving.
Pastors in Uvalde, Texas reflect 1 year after the school shooting there. It's Wednesday, May 24th, and this is Here and Now Anytime from NPR and WBUR Boston. I'm Ashley Locke, in for Chris Bentley. Also on today's show, in the new movie, You Hurt My Feelings, an author learns her husband has been lying to her about liking her work.
I am never going to be able to look him in the face ever again. Okay, that's over.
And hundreds of people named Kyle attempt to set a world record for the largest gathering of people named Kyle.
If you are a Kyle in the area, start making your way to the stage. We need all Kyles to make their way to the stage.
But first, emotions are still very raw in Uvalde, Texas. It's been 1 year since a gunman killed 19 children and two teachers and injured 17 others at Robb Elementary School. Deepa Fernandez has a conversation with two pastors from Uvalde on where their community is now.
Tony Gruben is pastor at Uvalde's Baptist Temple and head of the town's ministerial alliance. Pastor Gruben, welcome.
Thank you.
Joe Ruiz is pastor at Templo Cristiano in Uvalde. Pastor Ruiz, welcome to you too.
Thank you.
Some believe that time heals, but we know your community is still deeply hurting. Pastor Gruben, how have you been counseling people?
Mm-hmm. Time heals, but it's probably not as quick a time as we want it to be. But, you know, each one has their own timeline. So, you know, be patient and continue to look to God for strength and look to God. And even in the midst of the pain and the suffering and the anger, or the bitterness or whatever it is you're feeling, I mean, I say just, you know, don't give up on it and continue to go forward.
Pastor Ruiz, I imagine, you know, in times like this, people turn to their pastor. And I wonder if there's a Bible verse that you found yourself turning to this past year to find comfort or something that you tell your parishioners.
Yeah, I have several Bible verses that I love. That I know that they have helped me when I've been in situations like this. When I lost my son going on 2 years ago in a motorcycle accident, you know, going to the Word of God really helps us. And one of my favorite verses that I've leaned on is Isaiah 41:10, where it says, "Do not fear, for I am with you. Do not be dismayed, for I am your God. I will strengthen you and help you, and I will uphold you with my righteous right hand." And also another one where it talks about Isaiah 43:2. It talks about when you go through the waters, the deep waters, that he will be with us. When you go through the rivers of difficulty, that you will not drown. When you go through the fire of oppression, that you will not be burned, you know, that the flames will not consume you. But I don't believe people can heal without grieving first, you know, and I don't think that a lot of the families that have lost their loved ones or their children have allowed a time for grieving this last year. They've been so involved because of the media and everything else that they've been involved in, gun control, to be able to heal and start healing and to see, okay, from here, where am I going to? What's my next step, yeah. You know?
The whole community's impacted. I was just thinking, you know, say like when 9/11 happened. I don't live in New York, and it impacted the whole country. Of course, we are, you know, the closer you are, I think the more impact there is. I've thought about it nearly 24 hours a day for a year, and you know, I wake up in the middle of the night, and that's what I'm thinking about. And you know, not necessarily the event, but how am I going to help, and How do we help?
And how do you help, Pastor?
I'm not anything special. But I also know God is. You know, you asked Pastor Ruiz about, you know, what verse that comes to me is, God is our refuge and strength and ever-present help in time of trouble. That he is the one that I go to, and that he is the one that I point others to. That this is bigger than all of us. I mean, we don't know what to say. We don't know how to act. We don't know all of those things. But God does, and he cares for us all. And even those with anger, I've told many people who grieve, God's big enough to handle your anger.
I wonder, sir, or to either of you, if you've had anybody who said, you know, how could a God do this to innocent children, and maybe is questioning their faith?
We blame God, or some people may blame God, when God's heart was broken. If it would have been me, if I would have known this was going to happen, I would not have sent my child to school that day, and I don't think anybody would. Yet for all eternity, God knew he was going to have to send his son to endure, you know, the scorn, the pain, the suffering, the dying on a cross, being nailed to a cross. He knew that for all eternity that it was coming. And so that is what I would preach and would say, that God's love is so great. He covered that and he anticipated that.
Pastor Ruiz, you'll be speaking
yes.
at the memorial. What will you be telling people?
Well, I'm going to be praying for the survivors. And there's a scripture that I have used before, and that's in 2 Corinthians chapter 4, verses 8 through 12, where it says, "We were hard-pressed on every side, but not crushed, perplexed, but not despaired, persecuted, but not abandoned, struck down, but not destroyed." So, you know, this last year, we were struck down. You know, we had a good community, a community that stuck together. And it seemed like this last year, it seems like Uvalde is divided. But we have not been destroyed. You know, we can still become, if we refocus, come back together, and continue to just trust God, you know, we will become even stronger than what we were before.
That's very powerful. And I wonder, just Pastor Gruben, what do you want to leave people with on this day?
I would say, number one, trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways, acknowledge him, and he will make your path straight. God, lean on him. And I also say, you know, lean on each other. And that, you know, I'm a golfer, and I didn't play much during June until right at the end. And I said, I need to go play golf. And so I went and played one morning and just played four holes. Well, that was on a Tuesday. I said, well, I'm going to get up earlier and leave about 7. If I can go at 7, I can go get in and play before anybody gets there, and I can be through in less than an hour and play 9 holes. So that's what I was planning. Well, I went there, and there was 2 guys that got in front of me, and I went, oh, man, I'm going to have to slow down or whatever. Well, I ended up, they asked me to play with them, so I did. And on the 3rd hole, one of the men came over to me and asked me, he says, do you know so-and-so? And I said, yeah, I know him. He says, did you know that his grandson was one of them that was killed? And I go, I did not know that. And he ended up playing with us. And those 2 men ministered to this grandfather as we played golf out, you know, out in the, just on the golf course. Neither one of those men were what I would, or paid ministers, but they ministered to him. And after we played like I said, I was going to play 9 holes, but since this grandfather was playing with us, I said, well, I thought that was where I needed to be. I mean, it wasn't any kind of church setting or anything, just out where we were. And at the end of the 18 holes, well, I just asked him if we could just pray for this grandfather. And so the 4 of us just got around the hole and put our arms around each other, and we prayed. And, you know, we lean on each other. And I remember when Joe's son was killed in the here a couple of years ago, he invited me up to the front at the funeral. Each one, you know, leaning on each other and carrying each other. And, you know, we've had all kinds of outside help, but truly to for us to heal and to go forward, it's us who are here, and family members and loved ones that, you know, that'll walk with us, because that familiarity is also where we get strength. And I believe as we go the days to come, that's where healing will come, number one from God, but from also from each other.
I feel like that's a hopeful note to leave us on.
Yes.
Pastor Gruben is with Uvalde's Baptist Temple and head of the town's ministerial alliance. And Joe Ruiz is pastor at Templo Cristiano in Uvalde. Thank you both so much for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
There are still questions today about why 400 law enforcement officers responded so slowly in Uvalde, and why so few have faced accountability for their actions.
There are still some ongoing investigations, including one by the local district attorney, as to whether or not she will attempt to prosecute police officers related to their alleged misconduct that day. But for people in the community, they're like, look, it's been a year. I mean, all of the evidence that is relevant to that investigation was probably obtainable within weeks. You know, everything is recorded. They just don't know what's taking so long.
Go to hereandnow.org for our full conversation with Texas Tribune politics reporter Zach Despart. Coming up next, who hasn't told the person they love a little white lie on occasion to spare their feelings? Is that worse than just telling the truth? Scott Tong explores the fine line after the break.
How honest should we be with feedback? The new film, You Hurt My Feelings, explores this question. Julia Louis-Dreyfus stars as Beth. She's an author and a writing teacher, happily married, it seems, to her therapist's husband, Don, played by Tobias Menzies. But Beth is having trouble getting her latest book published. So her husband encourages her, saying, "Nah, you don't need another draft. It's good."
"I think you're done.
You must be so sick of reading it."
"Not at all, Beth. It's wonderful, honey, really."
"Yeah, but then why the hell haven't I heard from Sylvia? Maybe it's bad. Maybe it's not as good as my memoir."
"You wrote a great book. Like, believe me, she's going to call you. She probably just, you know, hasn't read it yet, that's all."
"Really?"
"Yeah, I'm sure of it."
Well, Don is lying. Turns out he doesn't like the book, as we hear in this next conversation he has with his brother-in-law, played by Arian Moyad. Here's that.
"Can you say anything?"
"No, I can't. I could have, maybe should have, you know, like second, third, 20th read."
"20th read?"
"Yeah, yeah. Draft after draft after draft. She was asking for notes, and I didn't know how to, and now it feels too late."
"And it's no good."
"Not to me."
And of course, Beth happens to overhear all that. Awkward. Again, the film is You Hurt My Feelings. It's written and directed by Nicole Holofcener, and she joins us now. Nicole, welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So, pointing out the obvious, you're also a writer. I'm a writer. And so I instantly identified with this, you know, when you show it to someone and ask what they really think.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure I want to know what they really think. Where did the idea come from for you?
You know, doing what I do, and any creative person doing what they do, wonders if people are lying to them when they say they like their work. And, you know, sometimes I appreciate the lie, but there's still a sinking feeling in me that wonders, you know, did that person tell me the truth? And so it just seemed like, oh, this is a nightmare. And what if it happened to me? It started from there.
It is, as you're portraying in the film, a nightmare for everyone involved, right? All the characters are on the giving end of feedback and on the receiving end. And so you can hear Don's dilemma, the husband here. He doesn't want to hurt his wife's feelings, so he doesn't tell the truth. We all have children, and, you know, we say certain things to encourage them to keep trying. I mean, is this just part of being human?
I think being a kind human, right? A conscientious one or a sympathetic one, yeah. I feel bad when I have to lie, and I hope that people can't tell, and I do my best just to support them, because if I love them or care about them or even appreciate their work, but not necessarily this one, you know, I want them to feel good about themselves, just like I want them to make me feel good about myself when they don't like my work, right? Mm. So it's a conundrum, and definitely with kids, you know, that fine line between not wanting to turn them into egomaniacs you don't want to tear them down either. So there you go. Part of being human.
Yeah. In the film, the character Beth completely freaks out after she just happens to be behind her husband when the truth comes out. Mm-hmm. Let's listen to a scene between Beth and her sister, played by Makayla Watkins.
I've given him like a million drafts to read. And every time he reads it, every single time he tells me how much he loves it. Every single time!
Because he just doesn't like, you know, get it or whatever.
And now my hands have gone numb.
Yeah?
For real.
Okay, can you take a deep breath?
I am breathing, Sarah.
All right. Would you just... You're going to talk to him.
Well, that's a joke. I am never going to be able to look him in the face ever again. Okay, that's over.
She's funny. She's dramatic. This, to me, is one of the most important moments in the film, because now she's processing, this is what my husband really thinks of my work. For you, is this a critical moment?
Yeah, it was a critical moment writing it, too, because I didn't know what she was going to do when I got to that point. You know, how dramatic should this be? How much should she fall apart? You know, she's an adult person. She has to eventually kind of come down and be able to discuss it with him, which she does. But when I was writing it, I just put myself in her shoes and I thought, oh, is she going to move out? You know, like if she really can't look him in the eye, not so much because he lied, but because it's so humiliating to be lied to and believe it.
As I hear you talk about this, Nicole, I'm thinking about people who didn't give me the straight story, the straight feedback. You know, I've attempted one book. It did okay. And people have come up and said, you know, great job. And, you know, and while they say they read it, I don't know if any of that is true.
Right.
Do you wonder about this? Like, who out there in my circle, in my family, in my house is lying?
Yeah. I think I flatter myself in thinking that I can tell. I've had to lie and white lie so many times myself that I can sort of hear what it sounds like coming from somebody else. I could be wrong. I could be paranoid and insecure, which, you know, those are givens. But yeah, I can sort of tell when someone isn't really in love with it. And I can tell, I think I can, when someone really does get it and love it. And that it just fills me up with love and warmth.
These challenges of giving feedback and trying to give it the right way, the honest way, are in so many walks of life, right? Mm-hmm. Beth, played by Julia Louis-Dreyfus, her sister is a decorator, and her client keeps rejecting her suggestions. Her brother-in-law is a stage actor. I mean, in so many walks of life, we depend on feedback, and we say we want the honest feedback. Is that what you're trying to explore here?
Yeah, I guess I am. And I guess I'm also exploring how to handle it. Like, how should Beth handle this? And can she look him in the eye again? Because he loves her, and he might not love this book, but he loves her. And I guess that's something that I grapple with if I show, say, a script or my film to someone who means a great deal to me, and I think that they don't like it. Can that be okay? You know, if I know they love me and care about me and they're not going anywhere, but they didn't love maybe this one or that one or any of them, can I have enough self-esteem or believe in myself to let that be okay? And sometimes it is. Sometimes it's not. Sometimes it makes me not want to call that person again.
Yeah.
It's embarrassing. I feel like they're looking at me like, you know, I don't know what I'm doing. And that just, I can't take that.
The power of shame, right? I mean, it is such a strong, oh my goodness. you have a previous film, a 2006 film, Friends with Money, that deals with what happens when your friends have money and you don't. And then you have a 2013 film, Enough Said, where the central character finds out she's dating her new friend's ex-husband. And now you hurt my feelings. A lot of these have people in really uncomfortable, awkward situations.
The uncomfortable situations are the things we don't talk about and skirt around. And that's what interests me so much, is to break the taboos. you know, and friends with money to actually say, you got a lot of money, give me some. And, you know, a lot of people wouldn't say that, but they think it and they tell their friends that, or, you know, saying the thing you're not supposed to say, that just intrigues me. And of course, awkward situations are thoroughly entertaining. You know, without an awkward situation, you don't really have a conflict. And
we cringe and we keep watching.
Yeah, exactly. Because it's us. Yeah. Hopefully it's us. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you have a thought of what you want viewers to take away?
Yeah. I mean, I hope people walk out of the theater talking about it for sure and wondering and being inspired to explore these themes and these ideas. I also want them to be entertained. And even if they, you know, don't have a thought in their head after they leave the theater, that's okay with me, as long as they, you know, enjoyed it and felt something and laughed.
Can you imagine people walking out of the theater or watching it at home and afterwards getting into it, a bit of an argument? I never liked your parents. I never liked your painting. You're right. You can imagine that.
Yeah, or someone coming out of the theater and I was like, come on, give it to me. I know there's things. I can take it. I can take it. I want to be able to, like, hide in the restrooms and see what people say after they see the movie or in the
sidewalk. Yeah, because we think we can take it, right? We think we can take it.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how much I can take, honestly.
Me neither. I mean, I read your book and I loved it. I'm just kidding. But
there you
yeah.
go. Well done.
Yeah, I can't take it. Who can? I mean, I guess... I mean, look, I had, you know, so far this movie has screened many, many times, and the responses and the reviews have been extraordinary. Yet there are two people online who didn't like it. And, you know, I want to talk to them, and I want them to take down their scores, you know, and they're just a blip, a blip. But who doesn't do that, right? Who doesn't memorize the bad reviews as opposed to the good ones?
Yeah, I go there first.
Yeah,
I mean, right?
Of course.
I don't know why. That's permanently in the hard drive. Right?
Yeah.
We have been talking to Nicole Holofcener. Her new film is You Hurt My Feelings, and Nicole is writer and director. Nicole, great pleasure.
Thanks
for making this film, and thanks for talking to us.
Likewise. Thanks for having me. Take care.
You Hurt My Feelings opens in theaters tomorrow, just in time for the holiday weekend. Our producer, Emiko Tamagawa, also asked Nicole Holofcener for her thoughts on the ongoing Writers Guild of America strike against Hollywood studios. She emailed this statement. I stand with the Writers Guild. Studios should step up and pay writers fairly. Times and this industry are changing quickly, and that needs to be addressed. Writers' pay should be commensurate with the profits that the studios are making. I look forward to the two coming to a fair deal. Coming up, how many Kyles does it take to beat a world record? A reporter named Kyle, obviously, takes us to a town named Kyle to find out. One of the most popular baby names the year I was born, 1988, was Ashley. Growing up, it was so annoying to be named Ashley, in a class with multiple Ashleys. We would whiplash around anytime we heard our name, only to be disappointed that most of the time, someone meant to call another Ashley. Another popular name that year was Kyle. Instead of just being grumpy about having the same name, a group of them decided to have some fun with it. Last weekend, they gathered for the first time at Kyle Fair in Kyle, Texas. The goal? Break a world record with the largest number of people named Kyle. Troy Public Radio's Kyle Gassett was there to add to the count.
I knew that I was at the right place at Kyle Fair when I walked into the registration tent and heard this.
Can I get like six more Kyles this way? I need your IDs out.
Yeah, it's a little weird being around so many people that have your name, but you get used to it and even start to like it. Everyone has a green wristband with a number. I'm early, so mine is 94. At the end of the day, organizers are hoping to beat a 2017 Guinness World Record when 2,325 Ivans showed up in Bosnia-Herzegovina. Now it's on, because Kyles are definitely competitive. At registration, you get a shirt that says in big blue letters, "My name is Kyle." and Kyle Kulikowski from Tucson, Arizona, is not wearing his. Instead, he's got on a green trapper hat with flaps and a camo shirt. He says Kyle Broflovski may not be his favorite South Park character.
Not favorite, but I got a lot of quotes, hearing them a lot in high school. probably a lot of the Kyles here did.
But the Kyles don't seem bitter about it. They're having too much fun. Like at this booth, based on an internet meme from 2019 called Kyle Punches Drywall.
Yeah, there you go.
That's where I met Kyle Plotty from Minneapolis. He's having a blast meeting a lot of Kyles.
I had one Kyle in my class in junior high, and every time we'd see each other in the hall, we'd be like, hi, Kyle. And he'd reply back, hi, Kyle. So it was kind of our thing to say hi to the other Kyle.
The consensus at the booth is that Kyles get along, usually.
And Kyles, if you know another Kyle, you're instantly friends.
I did the exact same thing.
Way different.
I've never met a Kyle that I would like.
Yeah.
I've met a couple, but I got there eventually, you know, like, we started friends. So.
And there are a lot of Kyles here to meet. Young, old, some from across the country, and as far away as Australia. Kyle Johnson is from nearby Spring, Texas. As a female Kyle, she's gathered some interesting stories, like the time she got a draft notice because the Army thought she was a man, and in high school, when the teacher was calling roll.
We called roll, and they'd look around, and I'm like here, and they're looking around, and finally one of them said, oh, I was looking for a guy, and I said, so am I.
If you are a Kyle in the area, start making your way to the stage. We need all Kyles to make their way to the stage.
Then it's time for the big count. We're herded into groups, the count is made, and then...
Hey, what's the count?
All right, Kyle, unfortunately, we got our count and we did not make the Guinness record, but I got still...
500 Kyles short of beating the Ivans. It was a bummer, but Kyles recover quickly.
We're going to go punch some sheetrock.
Exactly.
Well, there's always next year. When I got back to my car, my battery was dead. Another Kyle gave me a jump, because as he said, leave no Kyle behind. For Here and Now, I'm Kyle Gassett in Kyle, Texas.
This show comes from the team behind Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston. Today's stories were produced by Lynn Menegon and Emiko Tamagawa. Today's editors were Kat Welch, Todd Munt, Eileen Belinsky, and Gabe Bullard. Technical direction from Mike Moschetto and Caleb Green. Theme music by Mike, Chris Bentley, and Max Liebman. Our digital producers are Allison Hagen and Grace Griffin. The executive producer of Here and Now is Carlene Watson. Thanks for listening. See you next time.